place to go. Have no place to go. Darling, have no place to go. Have no place to go.
Well, high above an avenue called Wacker.
Yes, I'm going.
303 is Wacker Dave, to be specific. Hey, what are they building in the basement here? Every morning I come in, there's like 4,000 construction people going to the basement.
I have
is there
not,
some secret plan?
I believe it's a nuclear reactor.
I think it might be.
Maybe. I mean, they're doing all kinds of work on the building. They're building a new gym somewhere in this building.
Yeah, that's supposed to be upstairs, like high upstairs.
30th floor, yeah.
I don't know what they're doing. Do you think they're putting in like a pool room, maybe table tennis?
Could be, yeah. That'd be great.
We got to get right to the top six at six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
And again, I'm trying to start a rumor that there's some secret project going on in the basement of 303 East Wacker that's highly sensitive.
Please let it be a Starbucks.
Well, why not? There's not one within 4 or 5 feet of here.
There's not. I need one.
Item number one is Chicago public school classes are canceled for the sixth consecutive day during the teacher's strike. Mayor Lori Lightfoot vowed the city can't bail the school system out to secure a teacher's contract. The union's requests, including staffing guarantees, smaller class sizes, have been estimated to cost about $2.4 billion over the length of the next deal. Steve, any update on that?
No, the only update is that the kind of the back and forth, the rhetoric from both sides, but from the city especially, yesterday the mayor said the teachers union needed to get real about negotiations. That's the kind of rhetoric that stretches out a contract dispute like this when you have, you know, start throwing around, you know, phrases like that and, you know, we don't have any more money. And but again, it's on both sides that, you know, this feels like we're settling in here for a long strike.
And have you ever noticed you could never put the word rhetoric in a sentence and have it turn out good?
No. Mm-hmm. It's always negative.
All right, we had some great rhetoric out there today. Who's happy about the rhetoric? Item number two, Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot delivered her 2020 budget plan yesterday, laying out a plan aimed at digging the city out of an $838 million deficit. We'll take this up with Alderman Brendan Riley after 7 o'clock today. One of the big things that came up is a higher tax on food and drink. And Brendan Riley has about 9 million restaurants in his district. So he has a particular concern about this. One thing I do know is parking rates are going to go up to $500 an hour. And that seems right.
Also on ride shares, legal marijuana, and an increase in revenue from property transfer taxes. Pretty much two things out of that affect me all the time, every day.
Can you imagine if you were in an Uber smoking weed trying to transfer your property, how expensive that would be?
On the way to a restaurant.
Crazy. Next. State Review Board has approved plans to build an eight-story, $200 million facility for Provident Hospital in Bronzeville. The new hospital will sit west of the current Provident, be about 22% smaller, but with more cool toys and stuff. The Illinois Health Facilities and Services Review Board approved it yesterday. It should be completed by April of 2023, and it's a good thing for the neighborhood. Next! Google announced it has achieved a breakthrough in quantum computing research. Let's go live to Dave on this. Dave, you're our expert on quantum computing research. What do you know?
Well, I know that quantum, I can spell it, and there's research done about using it for computing. Back to you, Steve.
The quantums are all being researched right now, all of them.
Is a leap involved?
Yes.
Yes, it is a leap. It's a big leap.
Okay. There's no question about it. Calculation in just a few minutes, it would take a traditional supercomputer thousands of years is what they're hoping to achieve here.
So for all of us who do big math calculations at home on our personal computers, mm-hmm. This is going to be a big plus because we'll be able to do them in just a couple of hours.
And here's the weird thing. It just looks like a giant calculator. Yeah. It's got big buttons on it. You know, button. There's like eight guys holding it up, somebody else pushing the buttons. It's old school like that. Next, get your cameras ready for the Portillo's Experience. Another one of these pop-up situations. We should do a pop-up Steve Cochran show.
Yeah.
You have to pop up somewhere else in town.
How about the basement at 303?
The whole point of this is to have a hook and lots of things that will look great on your Instagram, because it's all about the photo for the Insta.
Well, you and Viv and Dave and Mary, y'all look great on the Instagram.
So maybe
Grzanich and me.
We do a paper mache sculpture of your head. Like, you know, and then people can actually take a photo with Steve Cochran, but it's like...
And it says actual size on the sign in front of it?
Yeah.
Let's just get a chia pet.
You guys are mean. I mean, I'm nothing but nice. You guys are mean.
When I was a kid, we used to one of the Halloween costumes I wore was the Charlie Brown head.
Yeah.
And it was a paper mache head. And
it was
just giant. I'm thinking that's what your head would probably look like if we did a costume.
You know, hey, tiny head. What are you talking about?
It's just like it has to be dramatic.
I know, but Chris Hanich's head is just as big as mine.
My head
but
is
But it
giant.
Has to be something it's dramatic and artistic that looks really good that people can stand next to and then post on their Instagram and it makes people stop as they scroll.
You know what's so, you know, so funny about this? The pop-up idea, I've already lost interest.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I mean, in me. I've lost interest in me as a pop-up. Woodfield Mall is going to be where the Portillo's pop-up happens November 6th through December 31st. Step into the French Fry Room featuring cheese sauce dripping from the ceiling.
Sammy, is this a good idea?
So, on your head?
What do you want that for?
It's a great picture.
Why could you just go to a Portillo's and take those pictures?
No, because this is going to be like everything's going to be larger than life. It's going to be striking, visually arresting.
But any of you people go anywhere without taking a picture?
It's about the life.
Do you go anywhere and just look around and
just
go look at the world?
I'm letting you know what the young people are doing.
Will the cheese sauce be
That's
edible?
Not even me.
You know, you'd be like a turkey in a rainstorm. Steve would be in there with his head up and his mouth open. Life-size plush French fries as well in a room and a neon sign that says, I only have fries for you. Or you can pose on a giant onion ring swing. Well, that sounds dirty. Or a hot dog sofa.
See? This is why I'm trying to do something dramatic.
I got to tell you, I don't think this is what Dick had in mind when he opened Portillo so many years ago.
But it's brilliant because you do this and then people advertise for you.
Yeah, which is great because Portillo's really does need the business.
But can you actually get food there? That's what this doesn't say.
It doesn't sound like it, does it?
No.
Yeah.
It just sounds like
photo
op. Plush French fries.
And then there's this. Cards Against Humanity, the self-prescribed party game for awful people, plans to open Chicago's first board game cafe, a restaurant and a bar with a board game library and shop. Ooh, booze and Candyland all in one place? Exciting. It's the Margie's Candies building in Logan Square, and it'll open early next year. Why does it take until early next year? Just get a bunch of board games, throw them in a room?
No, Cards Against Humanity, that is the game that everybody like.
No,
loves.
I know the game, but I'm saying why does it take this long to open this cafe?
Because it's special. It's Cards Against Humanity.
It's going to be great because you can go and you can take a picture next to the Cards Against Humanity people.
A giant version.
Nick DiGilio talks about show business and stuff coming up.
That's it!
That's all today for the Top 6 at 6.
No more!
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men.
Couple of textures, 708 Steve, they're updating the Batcave in the basement. That's the secret plan at 303 East Wacker. I should go down there and say hi to Oliver.
Cool. Yeah.
Hmm.
To?
Oliver, the butler.
That's Alfred.
No, it's a new guy.
Replaced him. Sorry. My bad.
Alfred died.
Okay, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah. You could have been a little gentler.
Well, I had
the way
to get somebody new, and they got this guy named Oliver. 6-rail, the quantum supercomputer will still get stuck at Cook County property taxes. That's the one thing it can't possibly compute. That and airline fares. At 6:22, our friend Nick DiGilio joins us now. I thought you were going to hang out on the show yesterday. What happened?
I overslept.
Oh.
I went home to get a couple of hours.
Oh, and then
sleep.
You were coming overslept. Back. I got it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. I thought you were just going to stay here.
It was very anticlimactic.
Yeah, I was going to, but I didn't get a lot of sleep the day before. You know, I have a really, I don't know if you know this or not, Steve. I have a very weird schedule.
Well, you and the vampires.
Yeah.
And now tell everybody what time you're on the radio here at the Mighty 720 WGN.
I start at 1 a.m. I go till 5 a.m. every weekday morning, Mondays through Fridays.
By the way, when we moved you to 1 a.m., and when I say we, I mean they, when they moved you to 1 a.m., that had to be quite a shift in your life because 1 a.m., I mean, that's like noon for me.
Yeah, no, you know, to move when I first started this shift, it was at 2 a.m., and then they went, hey, we're going to give you another hour at 1 a.m. I went, wait a minute, I can't do that.
Right. I don't have that kind of material.
I can't. Are you kidding me? I got to do 4 hours instead of three? What are you, nuts?
All right, now there's a bunch of movies opening this weekend that I don't know anything about. I'd rather talk about Halloween, but do I need to know anything about Countdown, Black and Blue, or The Lighthouse?
Well, The Lighthouse is the most interesting one. Black and Blue is a cop drama. Countdown is a generic horror movie about a girl who downloads an app that kills her. So you know, it's a documentary.
Nick's writing a new movie called Spoiler Alert.
Lighthouse does look freaky.
Yeah, well, The Lighthouse is from the director, this guy Robert Eggers, who made a movie a couple of years ago called The Witch, which I think is one of the best horror movies, I don't know, 10, 15 years. And it's a very strange film. And the latest movie from this guy is in black and white. It takes place in the 1890s at a New England island lighthouse, where it's basically a two-man show between Willem Dafoe, Robert Pattinson. All kinds of crazy, surrealistic things happen, and there may or may not be a mermaid. So this, to me, this is the one to see this weekend. So,
have you you ever been in a lighthouse?
No.
I have.
Yeah, I have too. They're cool.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. It seems like a pretty lonely existence if you're, like, living in a lighthouse.
Has there ever been
another? Well, that's kind of what happens to these guys. It's just the two of them, and they go nuts.
Yeah, they lose their mind. What'd you say, man?
Has there ever been another lighthouse horror movie? I mean, you'd think there would be. Wasn't there one where somebody was out there with a couple? It was a couple in a lighthouse, and something happened with her baby?
That was
Rosemary's Lighthouse.
There's one called Paper House, and the best movie that takes place in and around a lighthouse is John Carpenter's The Fog, which is a classic movie, where actually Adrian Barbeau plays a DJ on a radio station doing an overnight shift.
Wow. Oh.
In the lighthouse?
No.
In the lighthouse.
The guy in the lighthouse listens to her.
From the
I mean, the movie looks super dramatic from the trailer that I saw. It just looks like long stairs, lots of sea mist and rain.
Has anybody in the gang seen The Witch, the movie that this guy made before?
No, I want to see it though.
It's weird. It's slow. It builds up the tension so you kind of can't take it anymore. And it's brilliant. And this is what this guy is good at. And the fact that he went to black and white and pretty much his entire cast is just two great actors drinking and going nuts in a lighthouse. This is like in my wheelhouse. Big time.
All right, so Halloween's a week from today. It's your favorite holiday, and you should never miss a Halloween Nick show because it's like a movie about a lighthouse. It's different. but I have in front of me your top 25 Google-searched Halloween costumes, if you'd like to know. This is from a new application called Frightgeist. Google's got a lot of money. They can throw it away on different things. Frightgeist tells you everything you know about Halloween if you want to Google search that. So here we go, starting at number 25 and going to number 1. A bear, a cheerleader, a vampire, a ninja, a devil. Those are your first five. Anybody? Anybody in those this year? Moving on.
Sure.
A mermaid.
Yep.
You're a devil?
Devil, yeah.
Okay, how about a mermaid, a doll, a princess, anything from Toy Story or a superhero? Those are your next five. Not bringing a bell.
I would go Toy Story if I were going to pick anything.
15's Harley Quinn, 14's Mouse, then anything from Stranger Things, a pirate or a rabbit.
I didn't realize how huge Harley Quinn was until I went to C2E2 and everybody was Harley Quinn.
I don't even know what you just said.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't either.
Who's Harley Quinn?
It's a movie character. What was the movie?
She's a comic book character. She's Joker's girlfriend.
That's it.
And,
That's what you said. Your top 10, Unicorn, anything from the 80s, Chucky, Fortnite, a clown, anything from The Descendants, a dinosaur, Spider-Man, witch, or number 1, It. It.
Yeah.
The Stephen King movie.
You're going to have competing clowns this year, because you're going to have the Joker, which is essentially a clown, and you're going to have It. And you're going to have just like a regular clown, like a nice clown who makes animals and stuff and doesn't kill them.
I'll stay inside then.
Yeah, it's probably a good call for all of us. We have a helpful texter who says a movie called Light Between Oceans. It was a novel made into a movie. That might be the movie that Mary's
thinking
of.
That's the one. That's it.
Thank you, helpful listener.
Yes.
All right, buddy. Listen, get some rest and stop by and see us sometime.
I will, buddy. Take care. Thank you.
That's Nick DiGilio, and he's on every night from 1 to 5, and he's all over. He's got tremendous Facebook presence. He's all over your Facebook. So check that out as well. We'll come back with your headlines. Chuck Todd coming up, 720 WGN. The Washington Nationals continue their impression of the 2005 Chicago White Sox, and why not finish it off? Chuck Todd, our friend, joins us this morning from wherever Chuck in the world is. Chuck, congratulations. You now have to lose 4 of the next 5 to lose the World Series.
It's a great way of putting it. I appreciate that.
That's awesome. Focus on the negative rather than the.
I'm trying to tell you what position you're in.
05 White Sox, I feel like it's a pretty good comparison. I mean, you know, that team just looked unbeatable after a while, right? It just couldn't lose. And if I remember, the Astros were actually red hot when they got to the World Series.
Yep.
Carlos Beltran, if I remember, couldn't miss a baseball. And he had some absurd run. I think that was the year he had 8 home runs or something. And in the postseason, some ridiculous figure like that.
But this is what Washington needs right now. Washington, D.C. locally needs this because Washington, D.C. is on fire and not in a good way.
No, it is. I don't know how to tell people this. I mean, the Nationals are keeping the city from totally burning down. I mean, it is this unifying force that is like holding it together while everybody, you know, else in this town is losing their mind.
I don't even know where to begin. Why don't we start with, and these are all facts. I'm not making anything up here. The president of the United States called American citizens human scum yesterday, and it's barely a blip on the radar.
No. I think the conditioning that it's funny you bring this up, and I feel like sometimes I'm screaming into the wind. The systematic conditioning he's done to the country that dehumanizing people is just regular political attack is something that I don't know how to get this back, but we have just totally so lost our way on that front that we have. I mean, I can't tell you the number of hours or days or months that parents spend telling their kids not to hit, to be nice, don't name call, all of these things. And the supposed role model of a country, Donald Trump, does these things. And it's like, you know, and in some ways, oh, complaining about it now, he's been doing it for, you know, 40 years. Well, just because he's been doing it for 40 years doesn't make it right. I mean, it's the dehumanization of it all. And, you know, this is where social media comes in. You know, this is why Mark Zuckerberg got a rhetorical head bashing yesterday, because I think any elected leader or anybody that thinks about this for a second realizes that it's social media that has helped accelerate this trend.
Speaking of that, you guys did you win an Emmy for your social media show? I mean, you guys did a great deep dive into social media not that long ago. And continue to look at it, NBC News, and at Meet the Press. At what point does Facebook and Twitter and Instagram have to take credit for the havoc they can wreak?
I don't know. I think it's going to. I mean, I just don't understand why my business and your business, Steve, is held to a different standard than social media. Nobody can buy time on WGN, and WGN's executives cannot knowingly air some false ad.
Right, of course.
Okay? They can't do it. It's illegal. We can't do it. Mark Zuckerberg, I don't know. I don't know what I built. Oh, my God. I don't know how to fix this thing that I built.
Right.
It's the weakest, and it's just an obvious, like, he doesn't want to. He's afraid of messing up the business model. The only business model that he thinks that works, apparently, for Facebook, is using an algorithm to trick people. Because what he's saying is that he is afraid of helping people know the truth, or helping people know what's real and what's not real.
Which, by the way, should be his...
in a rabbit hole.
Yeah, and by the way, that should be his duty as well. That should not be just something, an option. That should be something he is compelled to do.
Right. He does not think he's a publisher. He thinks he's some hacker who just figured out a way to meet people without looking them in the eye. Well, you know what? I'm sorry that he had social problems talking to people, and he had to invent an algorithm in order to improve that, or whatever it is. But this is not helping human interaction.
Not at all.
And then he hides behind there. Yesterday, he's pushing this cryptocurrency, and he's like, oh, I just wanted to bring banking to the world. Really, dude?
Yeah, I don't know that that's exactly his plan, but his business model does look good. It's hard to argue with the stock, and that seems to be the number one.
No, he's growing users, but he does. But, you know, who, again, the incentive to stay on social media is to get you riled up.
the facts continue. The president stood up yesterday and said that we have peace in the Middle East. I'd like an update from you, Chuck.
That was the hardest thing yesterday. I had to anchor that special report. I mean, there was a time he basically said the moon is the sun and the sun is the moon. Richard Engel summed it up pretty well. The president congratulated himself for stopping a war he helped start. It was the most bizarre thing. Look, the president wanted to get out. We're not out. The president said our troops are coming home. He has sent 14,000 troops to Saudi Arabia in the last 3 months. That apparently has totally been forgotten, I think, by the president as well when he talks about that he's bringing all these troops home. So those facts don't fit. It is now Russia and Syria, Russia and Turkey that are patrolling this area. We have no say in any of this. We're keeping a small force, a very small force of special ops that I talked to some folks in the national security world who think it will at least protect the oil fields. But the president is right. It will allow to keep, and the whole point is to keep ISIS from getting control of those oil fields because that was their source of income when they were able to build the caliphate the first time. So that is why that is a significant thing. So, okay, so now we're guarding essentially the oil, for the Turks and the Russians.
There is, I'm reluctant even to bring this up because it's so ridiculous, but people do need to know that this is another thing that's not okay. And again, these are facts. There's a congressman from Florida who would be an insult if I said has the maturity of a preschooler. His name's Matt Gaetz, and he led a group of 20 other congressmen on some faux raid of the secret hearing that included his Republican colleagues. There's got to be some sort of discipline for this, isn't there?
I think there could be an ethics violation if they wanted to do that. I think the next time they could bring Capitol Police and all of that. Look, Democrats didn't want to see, when they did a sit-in, didn't want to see then the House majority arrest them either, and they didn't do it. So there is some tricky politics there. So I think as much as I think some Democrats would like to see Matt Gaetz, frog marched out of that committee hearing, I think that they're, in some ways, they're letting the antics speak for themselves. And what are the antics saying? When you have nothing else, when you cannot defend the facts, what do? Tip over the table, right? If that's essentially what they did, right? You're like, it's like if you're playing chess, I can't win, just throw the table over, right? So you don't get to win either, right? And all that. So it's what they're doing, but I think it is not a coincidence that it came the day after the single most damning testimony yet in this impeachment inquiry. And look, Republicans right now are just desperate for a talking point to satisfy Fox hosts in primetime. And so that little antic that gave them some programming. But at some point, this thing is going to be a set of public hearings. And, Democrats have to figure out how to navigate what will likely be more sort of fraternity prank-like antics from the Republicans.
You have Meet the Press on Sunday. You've got MTP Daily. You have the Chuck Toddcast. How do you avoid the redundancy of the truth every day? Which, by the way, I think is the title of my new book, The Redundancy of the Truth.
Redundancy of the Truth. It's one of my frustrations. I've been leaning lately on the explanatory. I feel like because I think we'll sit there and say, God, we keep having to correct this, or we keep having to say this. Spend more time explaining why the misinformation is happening a little bit, right? So I think in this case, why are the House Republicans resorting to this tactic? They got nothing else left. So I do think we need to do a better job of explaining, and that's what we've been trying to focus on, because you're right about the redundancy. You just sit there and, at some point, it can become white noise to the viewer, so you don't want it to that. But trying to explain the why of the antics at least gets you at the source of where this is all coming from.
Here in Chicago, I'm leading a coalition of people to adopt the Washington Nationals as your new favorite team until the Cubs and the White Sox return to the World Series. I hope you guys get a sweep here.
Danny Martinez, man, why not? Right? He was Joe Madden's bench coach, so he's a... By the way, we all gave this guy a hard time at the beginning of the year for his management of the bullpen. In this postseason, he's been managing his bullpen pretty darn well.
Yeah,
I gotta give him that.
Yeah.
Pretty darn well.
Two up. They need two more, and the folks in Houston can't figure it out because they were heavy favorites going into this thing. All right, Chuck, good luck. Thanks, as always.
Thank you, brother.
Right.
Talk to you soon.
See you later. That's Chuck Todd. All right, we're going to do this with traffic, and we'll come back, and I'll say hi to Pat Brady, who's here. Alderman Brendan Riley at 7:20 this morning to talk about what the mayor's budget address could do to his aldermanic district, which includes just about every restaurant you've ever heard of in Chicago. And top of the hour, Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy will give some sense of the lunacy of the House of Representatives as it stands now. Pat Brady and Eric Edelstein coming up as well. Dean later, Coach Colleton from your Blackhawks, and Jim Belushi will join us on the phone later to talk about a gig he has coming up that you might want to know about. And the Steve Cochran Show continues on 720 WGN. Now, this is an example of the text I get every day. This is after the Chuck Todd call a moment ago. So the Democrats are the adults in the room? Please. 847, it's okay for you to criticize him, but Trump's the bad guy? That's why he uses social media, because no one treats him fairly in the news. You act like it's news, but it's your opinion. You clearly are a Democrat. I'm sorry, sir or madam, I am not. There's the flip side of this as well, and that's this. Please thank Chuck Todd for pointing out the president's a bully, especially on social media, but so is every politician. They all name call bully and think their voice is the only voice. I pray the younger generation does not look at them as role models of any kind. They're elected officials, and it's time they get kicked out. They should be ashamed of themselves, and they do not set an example for anyone. And it's a shame they are deciding a path for this wonderful country. Please keep pushing back, and how they are nothing but pure bullies. And with that, I say good morning, Pat Brady.
Morning, Steve.
Well, get a microphone on here for you. How are you?
Great. How are you?
I'm doing just fine. We'll get into this in greater detail next hour, but any reflexive thoughts on the mayor's budget address?
Well, she got a standing ovation from the city council when she finished delivering it, but the devil's always in the detail with the budget because it's just a proposal. And part of this relies on help from Springfield, but I think she's getting pretty good reviews on making a good attempt to balance this $830 million deficit and not raise property taxes.
Where's the majority of the money going to come from? Because what I saw yesterday, including a piece I read in the Trib this morning, I think they called it five takeaways, is not going to make up anything close to $838 million.
That's true. But the she's going to do some debt refinancing. There's going to be single ride share tax and the things that Alderman Riley will probably speak about, tax on restaurant food. So there are several different sources of new revenue. I think she did it without eliminating positions too. But again, the devil's in the details.
I think she's getting rid of the no-show jobs.
Yeah.
Like there's jobs on the payroll that have existed for years that that nobody has to show up for, or they're just budget lines.
Right.
That hurt the number, and she's getting rid of those.
Yeah, and it's kind of master the obvious on that, something that should have been done a long time ago. But I do give her credit for trying to reach this budget balance without raising property taxes.
The school strike continues. You got an over-under on when it ends?
Well, I think would the longest one go 21 days?
19 or 20.
Yeah, I don't, but at a certain point, probably shortly, the parents are going to get fed up with the whole thing, and that's probably going to drive both parties back to the table. And watching it in the last week since we spoke last, the thing that I would love to hear that I haven't heard at all is we hear all these things that the demands that the teachers make, and I understand why they make those demands, but I haven't heard anything about the teachers are going to do a better job doing what they do.
Yeah,
it's not like this is a great school system that it's a model for the country.
Nope.
I'd like to see what's maybe some performance standards and things like that, and start talking about that a little more than what can we get from the taxpayers.
Oh, look, and it's news time. It is 7:08. Steve Cochran Show continues. Cirque du Washington, D.C. Complete Nutsville in D.C. Yesterday in particular. And Congressman Raja Krishnamoorthy joins us now from what district, Congressman?
Hey, Steve. Good morning. The 8th district, all the suburbs
west and northwest of O'Hare International Airport, including the runways, but not the terminal. We can talk about gerrymandering later.
Well, I'm glad they took the terminal away. I don't even know how you begin to explain the lunacy inside the Beltway that's going on now. But for those of us who are not inside the Beltway, it appears to be an S show. I don't know any other way of putting it. I don't think you think I'm that far off.
Unfortunately, I was there yesterday morning when about 30 House Republicans kind of barged into the room just as their own party members were about to begin questioning witnesses. And it was just an appalling display. It really smacked of desperation. It looked like an attempt to prevent more witnesses from testifying. And this is very, very sad.
So let me ask you the obvious question, because the talking point and the push that's going out is this. What are you guys trying to hide?
Actually, the process right now is in closed proceedings, but more than 40 Republicans are part of it. And I have to tell you that they basically get equal time to question the witnesses. They get opening statements, and they can question the witnesses on any subject that they want. We're about to go into more open proceedings and open hearings in, later on, this month or early next. But at this point, we're just trying to make sure that in the fact-finding phase that witnesses aren't able to align their testimony with each other. That's why we're kind of in this closed proceeding. But as I said, numerous Republicans are involved, the process inside is rather sedate and fair.
And am I wrong about this? The majority of Republicans in the House can have access to transcripts from the entire testimony in a secure location, a SCIF, which wasn't so secure yesterday?
That's exactly right, yes. They can come down and review the transcripts, when they become available, processed and become available, and that's starting now. And hopefully, Chairman Schiff hopes to kind of publish these transcripts to a broader audience later. But, I think yesterday was just an attempt to kind of avoid the substance of these proceedings, which, as you can tell, are not going very well right now for the president. Bill Taylor, the ambassador for the Ukraine, came in just 2 days ago, and he's one of the most credible witnesses I've ever seen. He graduated from West Point, served in Vietnam, has been a career public servant for 50 years, and he came in, stuck his neck on the line, risking his career to tell the truth, and his testimony was, it corroborated, actually, Mick Mulvaney's statement the other day that military assistance was conditioned on the Ukrainians beginning investigations to help President Trump politically.
And again, dealing strictly in facts, this 50-year diplomat, this decorated diplomat, was having a fine time in retirement. And Mike Pompeo, one of the president's closest advisors, asked him to come back. Your friend Eric Edelstein is here. Eric, say hi to the congressman.
Hey, Congressman, how are you?
Hey, Eric, how are you?
I'm good. Hey, one of the Trump talking points, which I think is weak, but I'd be curious your take on it since you're sitting there, is all the time that's being taken up with impeachment means that nothing else is getting done in Congress. No work on prescription drugs or health care or small business stuff. Can you address that?
Actually, interestingly, that legislation is proceeding at the same time that we're, having to go through this impeachment inquiry. Just the other day, H.R. 3 was introduced to finally allow the government to negotiate the price of prescription drugs and to, get a handle on our health care costs. I myself am chairman of the Oversight Subcommittee on Economic and Consumer Policy, and there we launched the first major investigation of the youth vaping epidemic. And actually, thanks to bipartisan support, including from the Trump administration, we are finally in a position to ban flavored e-cigarettes as well as crack down on illegal marketing. And the Trump administration specifically cited my investigation for their move. So interestingly, bipartisanship is happening in other areas, even at the same time that we're going through this constitutional process of the impeachment inquiry.
So the idea that the work of the country is ground to a halt is just, again, another lie. Is that right?
Yeah, the president unfortunately has a casual relationship with the truth, and in this case, he's incorrect. And the other thing is, I have to say that the president is really, his tweets are becoming more and more inflammatory by the day. And I think the other day he called Never Trump Republicans, and maybe he added Democrats to the mix. He called them human scum.
Those Republicans, and it's an interesting choice considering he may need those votes. In the Senate at some point.
Yeah, I mean that type of talk, it just degrades the dialogue here so quickly. And I think it does incite, those Republicans, those 30 House members, mainly from the Freedom Caucus, to kind of do whatever they feel is necessary to prevent these proceedings from continuing. And privately, some of these Republicans are telling me they don't know what the heck's going on with those folks, their colleagues. So it's really unfortunate.
We got Alderman Brendan Riley coming up on what's going on with the budget here in town. But last word to you, G.
Just wanted to bring it back a little bit locally. I know the 8th District has the highest percentage of foreign-born residents, and one of your top priorities was fixing the immigration system. Just wanted to get a check-in with you on how you feel like you've been doing with the promises that you made to your district.
Thank you for asking that question. Indeed, 30% of my residents, so 30% of the 750,000 people in my district are foreign-born, including myself. I'm an immigrant myself. And so I've been trying to do everything I can with regard to, folks who are trying to come here legally, but also people who are undocumented who came here. I have to say that what's happened on the border has just been really unacceptable with regard to the treatment of whether they're children or families. So we're trying to bring some oversight to that through the Oversight Committee, and we've made some progress there, but we have a lot of work to do. And then with regard to legal skilled immigrants, we're, basically at this point, putting the closed sign, C-L-O-S-E-D, closed sign out, telling them to go elsewhere and taking their talents elsewhere at this point. So this is really unfortunate, and trying to work on that as well.
Congressman Raja, thank you. We'll see you later on the news, I'm sure, including Congressional Ninja Warriors, where this thing appears to be headed. Thank you very much.
I hope not. Thanks.
Now we talk politics in detail every Thursday. Pat, where do you work?
Next Generation Strategies.
Eric Edelstein?
Right now at AL Media, but I'm thinking about going over to Next Generation Strategies.
I don't like your chances, to be honest
with
you.
Yeah, you know
what? Can you put in a good word for
me? You know what? Use me as a reference. We're going to get Alderman Brendan Riley in here, and G, jump in on this, too, because yesterday the budget news was big news, and Alderman Riley's aldermanic district looks like you're going to get whacked pretty hard. Good morning to you.
Good morning.
I don't know how else to...
Downtown's where the money is, so I assume if you're going to get whacked, it's going to disproportionately hit downtown.
Yeah, but I'm comfortable with that. I suppose you are, too, but there's an equability argument to be made, and tourism is a huge part of the economy in this town. What's this going to do to restaurants and bars if this tax pops at a number that seemed to come up yesterday?
Well, if I could take it, just to the highest level here, I think that the budget principles the mayor and her team are applying here are responsible and reasonable. And it spreads the pain out. I think they do deserve some credit for 64% of the budget balancing here occurs by cutting costs and finding efficiencies, which is something the previous two administrations spent very little time doing. And so I give her high marks on that. But when you get into the details, as we are, there are a few inputs, revenue sources that disproportionately impact downtown. And the restaurant tax is a concern for me. The city of Chicago currently collects a 0.25% tax on your restaurant bill, specific to restaurants. The mayor's proposal would double that to 0.5%, effectively adding a 25 cents to a $100 tab. My concern is this. I need to understand the trade-off here. It's supposed to generate around $20 million or so for the city, but what it also does is gives the city the distinction of having the highest sales tax in the nation. And so I'm not sure that's worth it. To your point, we're competing for tourism and convention dollars with other cities. That's not something you can really brag about, having the highest sales tax rate. So I'd like to work with the administration and see if there's another way to generate the revenue without earning that distinction.
Pat?
Hey, Alderman, as a leadership, if you have a leadership role in Chicago City Council, and it's not like the old days where mayor gets what mayor wants, how's this going to play out in City Council?
You know, it's going to be a tough sell. Any difficult budget, you know, $840 million is a big hole to fill. There's a little bit of pain in this budget for everybody. And, you know, there are some members of the City Council who are going to vote against this budget because it's Mayor Lightfoot's budget. But again, I think the way they've built this one, it's defensible. There are some lingering concerns about the state component. I'm not terribly optimistic. We're going to get a whole lot of help out of Springfield during the fall veto session. And that means the real estate transfer tax revenue that the mayor's counting on, $50 million or so, may need to be replaced with a local revenue source or additional cuts. And so that's kind of one of the variables that's out there. We're also looking for some assistance on the casino bill and a more fair tax structure for the city of Chicago. So we're going to be going to Springfield with a list of asks as they're heading into primary season, into the 2020 election cycle. Typically, I used to work down there. Springfield doesn't have an appetite to help out the city of Chicago, especially in election years. And so that may require some additional heavy lifting by the city council.
Jake?
Well, I take a rideshare a couple times a day. I'm either in an Uber or a Lyft, and I've just been shocked by the sheer amount of people that are doing rideshare for extra income or as a full-time gig. Just wondering, can you flesh out a little bit more the details on what the tax is going to look like for those of us who do ride Uber and Lyft, and you think ultimately it's going to affect people taking it?
Yeah, I do. And, you know, my word actually really gets hit on that because it's intended to, the higher tax is intended to be applied to rideshare trips that originate or end in the Central Business District. And obviously, all of my constituents live in the Central Business District and work here too. And so for them, they're getting taxed as they get into the car and to go to work, and then they're getting taxed on the way home. So that is going to be an issue for my constituents. The administration would argue that this is a good transportation policy. I tend to agree. We have an incredible density of rideshare drivers in Chicago, more per capita than New York by a lot. And New York's been struggling with the industry and the traffic impacts. They decided to put caps on the number of rideshare drivers that are allowed to operate. Mayor Lightfoot's going a slightly different direction. She's using higher taxes on those services to cull the herd and hopefully reduce the amount of these cars that are just circling downtown all day long waiting to get a fare. So that will likely get some criticism from my constituents. I have concerns about it, but I do understand that the policy goal she's trying to solve for.
So we can all get along on some level, and now we just got to make sure the math works. How long is this going to take?
We're going to have hearings for the next 3 weeks or so. So the mayor gave us a nice overview yesterday, but to your point, the devil is in the detail. We have about a 450-page document we have to pour through. I'm on, like, page 35, so I've got a lot of reading to do this
weekend. Hold on. You're actually reading it?
Yeah, of course.
I don't know if you heard. That's not done in politics anymore, where the politician actually reads the document. But you go ahead. You do what you need to do.
Yeah, I'm a reader. I take notes in the whole thing. And,
wow.
And you'll see. You can tune into the city council budget hearings to the city clerk's website. You can watch those hearings live. It's a fascinating time to actually tune into city council because you actually get a real sense of how each of these departments work, what's wrong with them, what are their challenges, how can we improve them.
Right.
So really, I do encourage people to watch this stuff and see how it all fleshes out.
Alderman Riley, if people want to get a hold of you, what do they do?
They can send me an email through my website at ward42chicago.com or at alderman@ward42chicago.com is a great email, too.
Appreciate you coming on.
Thanks for having me.
Headlines are next on 720 WGN. All right, Eric Edelstein, Pat Brady are here. That's Jisoo Kyi. As I introduce the band, that's Dave on bass and sports. Super Joe's playing the drums and producing. Vivian is questioning her life choices and also producing. And there's Steve in the newsroom. And Mary Vandeveld on traffic. Is that everybody? Oh, and hi, I'm Mick Jagger.
I'm a great drummer.
Yes, you are. Eric and Pat, jump in on the school strike. I struggle sometimes with how much does this matter to the folks in the suburbs, but what happens to the city matters. And everybody knows somebody in the city who's dealing with this, and there's an economic component, too. So it's a big deal, not just because it's Chicago, but because it's a big deal. Everybody we've talked to this morning seems to think we're here for a while.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Pat.
I was going to say, for me, it is and has national appeal, and it was good to see Elizabeth Warren come in and make a complete fool of herself, saying I'm standing with the teachers, not having any idea what this strike is about, and leaving town before taking questions. So it when Chicago school teachers strike, it's a national story.
Yeah, I'm hopeful we're not here for a while. I mean, I think the inside scoop, at least the rumors, I have no idea whether they're true, is that they're hoping that they'd be back in school on Monday, that this would be, they'd get it resolved by the end of this week or weekend. It sounds like there's progress, but I don't know. It's hard to know if you're not in that room. What I would say is I think the mayor's handled this with aplomb. I think she's shown strength. I think she's shown empathy for these teachers, but there's only so much money to go around, and I'm hopeful they get this resolved quickly.
773, I'm a CPS parent who's volunteered hundreds of hours to my kids' school. My spouse is a CPS teacher, and I teach CPS students in and out of schools and after-school classes. I'm totally against the strike. It's clear this is a union political power play. Many of us parents are furious over the havoc that it's creating for city families. Is there another way the union could have done this?
Absolutely. You know, you had a mayor that was elected with, 70% of the vote in the city.
I think she won all but 20.
She won all but 20 wards. The people of this city said, we want her to be our mayor and lead. I think CTU, who was for Preckwinkle and opposed her politically, I'm not suggesting that they went on strike because she was their political enemy, but of course this could have been avoided. You know, I think the mayor did everything she could to keep kids in school, keep teachers teaching, keep these, you know, high school athletes from missing their senior year, maybe one of the most formative experiences.
Never getting those memories back.
Never get those back. Of course, this could have been avoided.
Okay, stop yelling at me. I heard you first, of course.
Well, I agree. Hey, I agree. I'm seeing not just that the public sector unions create a lot of problems, not because rank and file want the strike, but that it's a way for the unions to maintain their power. And I think this is a great example. This could have easily been avoided.
What about the argument that the firemen and the police can make that, hey, yeah, if we want to strike, we still have to go to work?
Yeah, I mean, it's a public safety exemption. There's some people who think that should be for teachers. Look, I believe in the right to strike. I believe in collective bargaining. I don't believe in the reasons for this strike were really that fundamental to what they're going to end up with as a result. You know, I don't think we're in a situation where you have a chief executive that's against bargaining rights or opposed to workers or doesn't think the teachers should be paid fairly. None of those things exist. Those exist in some places in this country today. That's not the situation in Chicago. So, I am sympathetic to teachers' right to strike. I just think that the reasons for this strike seemed overblown.
Well, I think they're larger societal questions. I think they're legitimate questions. I do think it's important to have a social worker and a nurse in every school.
Sure.
Frankly, I thought it was law to have a nurse in every school, and I was wrong about that. Having said that, the big questions we're talking about here, affordable housing, things like that, or even a social worker or a nurse in those cases, if you have one in each school and they're sick, I just don't know how you enforce it, because right, what they're asking for and what's enforceable seems really difficult.
Well, this is a bit of the problem with sort of the new left and this kind of agenda where there has to be, in a sense, these purity tests, you know, the idea of universal basic income and affordable housing for everyone. And, you know, again, it's the world as they would like it to be. And I think it's an admirable vision. But then there's the world as it is. And, you know, that doesn't mean we can't be aspirational and have vision and goals for what an ideal society would be. But we also have to educate kids and run a city day to day.
And my point exactly, I have not heard in any of this discussion and throughout this entire process about teacher performance and that we're going to educate our children better. And we never hear that with the union. It's always about what can we get. It's never about, you know, what could we do better for the taxpayers.
I always feel like I have to do a disclaimer here and say my daughter's a teacher because she works with kids with autism all the time. I love teachers. I always have. But having said that, I have never in my life understood the concept of tenure. There's nothing more important than being qualified to keep your job when it comes to teaching and the idea that you get your job and at a certain point you can keep it as long as you want it regardless. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, that's a much longer discussion. You know, I think there are arguments for it. I do think I don't
agree. Help me with this. Give me one of the arguments for it. And today, I get it as a historical fact, but what's an argument for?
Well, historically, there have been principals and school districts that run things in ways that aren't necessarily on the up and up, and want to punish certain teachers and want to take, you know, run things in a way that benefit themselves.
But isn't that life?
Benefit the kids.
I'm going to tell you, on a couple of occasions, I may have had a clash with management.
Yeah.
And I have certain levers and ways to go about dealing with those, as everybody else does when they have a job.
Well, look, I'm going to defend teachers all day long, and I don't blame them for this strike. They go into a really difficult profession.
I agree.
God's work.
And class size matters. All these things
Our society needs great teachers. I think we have a lot of great teachers in CPS, and should be supporting them. But I think sometimes the CTU in particular kind of undermines the greater message on how great some teachers are.
I agree completely. I'd like to see talking about improved performance along with this and enhanced salaries.
Tenure explanation live from Ray. Go ahead, Ray. What do you got?
Yeah, hi. The state of Illinois changed the framework for how teachers are evaluated a couple years ago. Now all districts use Danielson framework.
Is there a short way to explain that to me?
The only thing tenure does is change how often you're evaluated. It does. It's not like it used to be where once you get it, you're in for life.
Okay, well, that's good to know.
So instead of being evaluated four times a year, you're evaluated every other year.
All right, I appreciate that. Thank you for calling.
Yep.
Man, I'm glad I'm not evaluated four times a year.
Oh, you're evaluated every Thursday. Are you kidding? We'll come back and talk about the stuff I'd prefer not to discuss, and that would be Washington. But, you know, it's happening, and somebody has to look at it and then look away. That's Eric Edelstein. That's Pat Brady. That's Jisa Ghi. And you know who you are, and if you don't, call someone. All right, so Washington, today, another day, another opportunity for the basement to be lowered another notch or two. When does this end? Man, if you tell me Election Day next year, I'm going to have to come over there and smack you.
All right, well, I won't say anything. No. You know, I am a cynical optimist or an optimistic cynic. I don't know. But I feel like we're making progress towards people waking up to the fraud that this president is. And I think, you know, Chuck Todd mentioned when talking about foreign policy that what's up is down, what's down is up. And his shtick of just saying the exact opposite of what the world really is, I think people are onto it. And I think people are getting sick of it. Not everybody. And I think it's a sham. I mean, to call Taylor an unelected radical bureaucrat.
Right. Like, this is a 50-year diplomat, a decorated career.
West Point.
A decorated graduate of West Point and a veteran, and also a guy who is happily retired,
right,
who was convinced to come out of retirement by Mike Pompeo,
right,
one of Trump's inside guys.
And then I hear this media report, you know, the guy or a guy or gal, Anonymous, is writing this book, right? And people were critical. Oh, they should put their name on it. Well, yeah, the president of the United States and his allies threatening the lives of people who come forward, and then we're critical of someone who is trying to tell the truth and doesn't want to put their name on it?
Well, that's the problem. There's so much to cover that it's impossible to cover it in depth where it's in depth enough for people to understand it. The whistleblower statute is not a statute that is designed to have, quote, due process for those who have been accused by the whistleblower. The whistleblower brings forth charges. It's like going to your HR. Mm-hmm. If you go to somebody with HR, your boss is a jerk, that's not a criminal conduct situation. That's between HR, you, and the person who you think offended you. It's the same thing here. And Washington has tried to turn this into it's some big criminal case, and the president in this case is not getting his fair shake. Now, the Democrats have done an exceptionally poor job of explaining why they may or may not be rational. Why is that?
because we're Democrats, and, you know, message discipline has never really been the thing. I think you're right. It should be explained much, much clearer. I think Congressman Krishnamurti did a great job this morning of explaining in very simple terms what Taylor's testimony said, that it corroborated Mulvaney, that they withheld military aid in exchange for political action, clearly a crime. And, you know, I think we all got to be better as a party and as a country in explaining this stuff. And the whistleblower stuff is a perfect example of that.
Pat.
I think watching all this testimony, what we're getting of it come down here, it's clear we're going to get a vote on articles of impeachment. I was glad to hear the congressman say today that these hearings will be public, because I think, granted, I understand, and most of us understand that there are Republicans in that room. I think it does send a bad sign when this is all in secret, so it needs to be in public. But I think what the big question is going to be, and this goes back in history, this will be the third time that the Senate has had to take this vote, whether or not to impeach a president. And the first time was Andrew Johnson, which had a lot of politics in it, with Bill Clinton. The country basically determined that lying under oath about sex with your intern, that's not enough to throw out the president of the United States. But in this case, given all the evidence and very solid evidence we've seen in the last 2 weeks, the Senate's going to have to make the call of whether or not, and they're going to make a determination whether or not the president, acting in his own interest in foreign policy to help himself politically, whether that is something he should be removed from office. And if they say no, then that's going to set the standard for presidential behavior going forward. So it's a really historically critical time for the Senate to take this seriously and do the right thing, whatever that may be.
There are congressional Republicans that are standing up for the first time, or the first time in a long time. An anomaly or a trend?
I agree with Eric. I think you're seeing 55% now or so actually support the inquiry, which is way up from a couple weeks ago. They're not there yet on impeachment. They weren't there yet with Nixon. The difference between the two, even Clinton and Trump, is Clinton was in the mid-50s in approval when it was all going down, and Trump's consistently in the low 40s. Plus, if you really peel back the layers on what he was doing, the Ukraine is fighting the Russians to protecting Europe. That alliance is so important to the United States, so important that Senator McCain, when he was almost at death's door, went over there to assure the Ukrainians that we were going to be with them no matter what President Trump said. And we saw what happened in Syria in the last couple of weeks. So the importance of Ukraine to us as an ally and what the president did with that relationship for his own personal gain, I mean, I think that's going to resonate if it's rolled out correctly.
The Drudge Report, traditionally right-leaning, and Fox News, very right-leaning, both are starting to question pretty seriously what Trump says and does. Big deal or not?
Yeah, I mean, this is a criminal presidency, and we have a liar in the White House who's incapable of telling any truth that is outside of the way the world he wants to see it. And to have major news media, I don't care if they're right, left, green, blue, whatever, they got to tell the truth too. That's their job. And, you know, I applaud them from doing it, but it shouldn't have taken this long. And frankly, Fox News is one of the reasons Donald Trump's in the White House. So I think they have an extraordinary responsibility to try to do what they can to correct it.
You know, it's funny, though. If you go back historically, to be fair, CNN is one of the reasons Trump is in the White House, because they put him on every single time he called the newsroom.
Well, all the media, in a sense.
Yeah, because it was a good story. Isn't this funny? And yeah, whatever.
Hey, but to follow up on that, though, and I think everybody listening and otherwise understands, I've never seen in my lifetime, and I wasn't around necessarily for 1968, people are really fired up and mad. I mean, people, I have good friends that disagree and completely think this is a sham, what they're doing to Trump. And it's really kind of a scary time because, I mean, Thanksgiving holidays, don't drink and talk politics, because people are really fired up about it.
I think there's a better chance this year that people won't talk politics at Thanksgiving because they're tired.
Exhausted.
They're just tired of it. They go, where's the turkey? The tryptophan will put me to sleep. I don't want to talk politics.
Yeah, but there's a lot of really bad rhetoric on both sides right now. And I think it's dangerous for the democracy.
By the way, you just reinforce what I said earlier, and that is you can't put rhetoric in a sentence and have it end well. If you can do that, it'll win your prize.
I don't even know what it means, but I heard Eric say
it looked good. Eric, where do you work? I forgot.
AL Media.
What about you, Pat?
Next Generation Strategy. I'm interviewing Eric today, but...
Yeah, well, good luck with that, Eric.
Tips?
Just use me as a reference.
We got a pool and a pond. Pond's good for you.
And we have Lincoln Forum news in the coming weeks, so stand by for that. Thank you both.
Thank you.
All right, we'll come back with the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom next.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you?
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey. You know I love you more than what I should.
It's 8:10, and we go live. As far as you know, it's always live. Live to Dean Richards, Channel 9, before he gets on a plane this morning and heads for Los Angeles, because he's a drifter. He goes from town to town. He's a bad, bad man. Good morning, Dean. Wow, all that, and I got nothing?
Hi, Steve. It's Dean.
Can we check Dean's connection? All right, we're on it.
I'm in New York. There's garbage bags everywhere.
You know, those intros don't just write themselves, you know? It's not like I just say that off the top of my head. You know, I sweat hours over that.
How are you, moron?
Or I just say that off the top of my head. You know, I'm fine. How are you?
Good. Just, you know, over here doing my moronic things.
That's a G. I'm Steve, and we're standing by for Dean.
This is Dean.
No, you're not really Dean, and your impression of Dean, frankly, needs some work.
Sorry, I'm Dean. Dean.
Wow, that's moron.
Much closer.
Moron. Welcome to Moron Entertainment.
I don't think you've met the two of us, because Dean generally is the guy that is more upbeat, verbose, and yes. Dean's a guy that...
Well, he's an intellectual of
the morons. Dean's a guy that can put a sentence together.
Yes.
I'm the guy that generally stumbles, doesn't know what's going
on. This is just generally my man voice. I think my man voice is this, like,
good morning, Dean. I don't know why every woman, when impersonating a man, has to make him sound like an idiot.
You're killing me being on time, by the way. How long have I known you?
Normally this 8:10 segment would start about 8:45. All right, so you're leaving for L.A. this morning, and what will you be doing there?
I'm going to be going to the red carpet premiere of The Irishman, the much-anticipated...
I'm looking forward to that, even though it's 4 hours and 45 minutes long.
Yeah, 3.5 hours long. Scorsese directs it, Martin Scorsese, De Niro, Al Pacino, Joe Pesci... among many other huge stars in it. They'll all be at the premiere at the Chinese Theater, the famous Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard tonight, and I'll be there talking to them on the red carpet. Tomorrow I'll sit down one-on-one with De Niro, and we'll have all that for you next week.
The Sunday morning show, I highly encourage you to listen, because it's great radio to begin with, but that's where you play the long form interviews you don't have time to play on TV.
Right. I'll probably have some of the red carpet interviews on Sunday morning, possibly the Robert De Niro interview on Sunday morning. Depends on, you know, we'll see what kind of mood De Niro's in.
Does your name have to end in a vowel to be, you know, in that movie?
In the movie.
Of course. Yeah. You bet.
Gotcha.
That's right. I'm right now I am already dripping spaghetti sauce on my shirt, so I fit in.
Any girls in that movie?
I would think they let a couple in.
High-haired, tardy types?
Let's see. Like a Married to the Bob kind of.
By the way, not T-A-R-D-Y, T-A-R-T-Y.
Let's see here. This would be an entertaining segment.
Yeah, go ahead and look things up.
Why don't I? Girls in the movie.
And now Dean looks things up on the internet.
Now listen to us.
Sorry,
typing.
I didn't mean to throw you.
Listen to us typing. Let me see who. Oh, Anna Paquin is in it.
Oh, there you go.
She good. Well, she good. We like her.
She apparently is
she's our favorite
woman.
Paquin.
Catherine Narducci and Denval.
There you go.
Is in it. Aleska Palladino.
Oh, sure.
Another one.
Stephanie Kurtzuba.
How about Luciana Babadagooch? Is she in it?
No. Also, you got you got a Bobby Cannavale.
Oh, she's great.
You got a Ray Romano.
What the heck is Anna Paquin doing in there?
You got a Sebastian Maniscalco.
That's interesting. Though it's not his first movie. He's done a couple, though.
No, he's done a couple of dramas.
You know him, right, Steve?
Sure, yeah, yeah.
Arlington Heights'
probably
very own.
The hottest comic in the country.
Mm-hmm.
Selling out arenas the way Steve Martin did in the late 70s.
Harvey Keitel.
Oh, he's a good woman actor.
Him.
Fine female actor.
Going to be in it? So supposedly they're all going to be on the red carpet tonight. What a lot of them do when they come to the red carpet, they walk on the opposite side of where the press is, so they can ignore us. And
any excuses are waving at the fans?
Yeah, they're pretending like they care to sign autographs for the fans. Really, they're trying to avoid us. And that's why when you see the reporters on the red carpet screaming their names out, trying to get their attention for a minute to get them to come over to chat.
And since this cast in particular is who they are, I would expect a lot of this. Hey, you looking at me? Hey, Dean, look at me. You looking at me?
Well, you got a question? You got a question for me?
Let me hear your big shot question, tough guy. Huh? How's my Joe Pesci coming along? All right, so when we come back, Dean will tell us about a lot of stuff. Rose McGowan, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, Cardi B, and more. All coming up.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richard.
All right, back to Dean at Channel 9. Some helpful texters, Dean, are chiming in on your trip.
Yes.
Says, Dean, I don't know if you know it's going to be in the 90s there. You're going to be sweating. You should probably just keep your Speedo on.
I did check the weather forecast, and I will be wearing a half shirt and Speedo, like Daisy Duke shorts.
Oh, so that's a hot look for you.
Super short.
That's very good. Helpful texter from the 815 says, Anna Paquin plays Robert De Niro's daughter in the movie who has a strained relationship with her father.
I loved her in True Blood. I'm just a huge fan of hers.
Me too.
Yeah. Helpful texter from the 630. Dean, why is it called The Irishman when it's all Italians?
It's a good question.
Maybe you should open with that.
Well, it's going to be my first question to Scorsese. What's the matter with you? Well, hey, what's the matter with you?
Yeah. Hey, you looking at me? Why are you looking at me?
Look at me when you
ask me a question, look at me. Don't look at me. That's what you're going to be dealing with the whole time. The entire time.
Glad I'm leaving so I don't have to answer any of the hate mail that's going to come in today.
Pacino's going to come up to you and he's going to do that thing where he talks softly and then he explodes for no reason. Well, Dean, I'd like to tell you exactly how I feel. And then De Niro will just mumble. I mean, it should be fun.
I've got my ace in the hole. If the interview goes south with De Niro, I'm just going to say Donald Trump. And see how he responds.
Yeah, and then just stand back.
Yeah.
Yeah, without a doubt. All right, who's Lizzo?
Lizzo has had the number one song in America.
I know. I'm just trying to set you up.
For the past. Well, Dad, Lizzo. I said, who's Lizzo?
He's making fun of me over here, Dean, because hey, I literally Dean. Just jumped out of my seat when
who's
he said,
who's Lizzo? Lizzo?
You love her song, Truth Hurts.
Oh, mm-hmm. Sure do, yeah.
It's been number one for 7 weeks now.
Yep, totally.
And the first line of the song is about taking a DNA test. And Lizzo has said that she was inspired to write this song after seeing a tweet by another singer named Mina Lioness.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We had something
very,
very similar. But now two other guys have come forward and said that they should get writing credit on the song as well. What are their names?
Bob and Phil.
Justin and Jeremiah.
What?
Raisin are their names?
I always knew them as Bob and Phil.
You're much closer to them than I am.
Yeah.
They said that they helped in this, so Lizzo has now filed a lawsuit asking a judge to declare those two men to not have any ownership of the song, not get any of its profits.
And Dave, editor here, Dave, what you don't know is Lizzo, shockingly, no relation to Cub famous Cub Anthony Rizzo.
No, not at all.
No.
Nope. Or Washington Nationals general manager Mike Rizzo.
Yes, neither one of those guys.
How about Wizzo?
He is related to Wizzo.
Yeah.
Wizzo the clown.
Magician.
Oh, he's a clown magician.
Wizard. He's a wizard.
There's one lyric.
From Arobia.
One line that's very famous, too, in addition to the one Dean said.
Yes, what line is that?
It's, why men great till they gotta be great.
Oh,
I'll
so in other
it.
Words, in other words, we step up until you really need us, and
yes,
then we step
and then
down.
You disappear. Yeah. And at the teacher strike, there was a poster that said, "Why Lightfoot great until she's going to be great?"
Yeah,
we're all quoting Lizzo.
I think teachers ought to use proper grammar and spelling on their.
Oh, good point.
That's a fair point. Yeah, Rose McGowan.
Rose McGowan is suing Harvey Weinstein. She filed a federal lawsuit yesterday, accusing him of conspiring to defraud smear, and marginalize. Didn't they do the morning show on B96 for a while?
Yeah.
Defraud, smear, and marginalize?
Yeah, and then they said we can't have three people.
They got rid of marginalize.
Mm-hmm.
She said that they were trying to intimidate her into not accusing Weinstein of sexual assault. Weinstein's attorneys yesterday say she's a publicity seeker looking for money.
They need to be careful. She's very angry and supposedly has saved everything.
Yeah. It's all going to go, that lawsuit's going to go to trial in January. A sexual assault lawsuit against Weinstein for two other women will go to court. He remains saying that he is not guilty of any of these charges.
10 more minutes of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Oh, good, because it wasn't long enough. Can we put another scene in of driving across L.A.?
It was 2 hours and 40 minutes when it came out last summer, and now Tarantino has decided to put 10 more minutes into the movie. It's going to be back in theaters this weekend for fans of him, probably no bigger fan of him than him, of this movie. All of this coming after the last couple of days, there's been like a big brouhaha with Tarantino and censors in China. They wanted him to edit the movie, in particular the scenes of martial arts legend Bruce Lee that the daughter of Bruce Lee complained was very negatively portraying her dad. The Chinese government agreed, so they wanted that change. Tarantino said, no way, I'm not changing my movie. So it looks like it's not going to play in China, which, you know, you're saying, you know,
it's a big market.
Big deal. That is a huge movie market. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of money.
Cardi B will be doing Fast and Furious. It'll be shot in her cleavage, and Dean will have all that coming up. 847 texter. Are they really filming Fargo next year in Chicago? I want to be on it as an extra.
I hadn't heard that.
I haven't heard it either. 630, that's, which phone number for WGN Radio should I use? I'm monitoring Dean's trip to L.A. I want to see if he wears his gold Italian horn necklace.
Oh, I still have my silver, my single tooth horn from back in the day.
That's a great comment.
Yeah, it's very solid. Listen, have a safe and great trip out there, won't you?
I'll talk to you tomorrow morning from Hollywood,
you
California.
You say that now, but you'll forget. You get to L.A. and you go big time on the show. You know you do.
I may go get some chicken and waffles instead. We'll see.
All right, talk to you tomorrow. Safe trip. That's Dean. He's going to L.A., and we're back with the headlines after this on 720 WGN. Coach Colleton coming up from your Chicago Blackhawks. Flyers and the Blackhawks at what time, Dave?
That will be at 7 o'clock tonight, 7:30 face-off with John Weideman and Troy Murray.
And last time the Hawks played the Flyers, it was a season opener in Prague,
mm-hmm.
and I ran into Coach Colleton in front of like a mini-market in mm-hmm. Prague.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm advocating that he and I don't meet in front of a 7-Eleven today.
That's a good idea.
Not that I'm superstitious.
Don't repeat history.
Just saying.
Yeah.
So he's coming up. And then Jim Belushi after 9:30. We'll do that about 9:40 this morning. Oh, and Bill Geiger's going to tell you all about your retirement plans. And tell you if you're on track or not. And tell you how to get some help. And G's got a lot of questions on that. Chicago Blackhawks on your Blackhawks radio station, 720 WGN. And the coach, Jeremy Colleton, joins us now. Coach, how you doing, man?
Morning, Steve. I'm great, thanks.
Good to talk to you as always. Dave Ennett's here as well. And G is preparing an incredibly detailed hockey question as we speak.
Good.
All right, so can you learn anything from one game in Prague that you can put in play tonight?
Yeah, well, we know what they're going to bring. They're a hardworking team, play a very simple game. They get pucks in, they forecheck really hard. They're going to put pressure on our defense, so we got to be prepared for that. And it's kind of nice to know what you're getting. There's no secrets there, and so hopefully that'll have our team really focused on what we need to do to have success.
I was downstairs as the players took the ice in Prague. And the one thing I noticed about the Flyers, Dave, is they're very big, and they're not attractive. But they skate well. They're all over the ice. I mean, I this may be an underrated team, Coach, in the big picture this year in the NHL.
Well, they have some good players, no question. And the thing that they've done, those those good players, the top players, have bought into playing a more direct game, a harder game, and one I think they feel will transfer to playoff success as well. They got to get to the playoffs, but they got some nice pieces, and it'll be a good challenge for us.
Jeremy, we've gotten to see Kirby Dach the last couple of games now, and I noticed that the top three players in the draft, and of course he was number three, are all playing in the NHL 4 months later. Are guys more NHL ready now, or is it just that these three guys were picked at the top of the draft for a reason?
Yeah, I think the top guys, there's, you know, every year there seems to be one or two or three, you know, who are ready. The young players now, they're acting like pros when they're teenagers, so they're, I think it's a little easier for them to make the transition. It's still an adjustment, and you're still trying to compete against men, but I know, just, you know, watching Kirby, like, he does a lot of the little things right that are going to allow him to have, you know, a cleaner transition to pro, and so far he's shown very well.
Your mic's off, Dan.
There it is. How about the way he conducts himself off the ice? Do you see kind of a maturity that maybe an average 18-year-old wouldn't have?
Yeah, he's definitely very conscientious about his game, and he wants to get better. He's got that, he wants to learn, which is, that's a huge positive. He's still a boy, though. Like, he's a big kid, but he's going to be a lot heavier in, you know, 3-4 years. And I think it's fun that he brings a little bit of innocence to the rink. And I think the guys enjoy having him around. And it's been a good, young players, they bring energy to your team. It's a hunger. It can help give energy to your older guys.
You know, you had a little giggle there, Coach. Is that a story you can tell or you can't tell?
It's not just, it's a feeling, you know, it's not just one story, you know.
So here's the thing, he scores the other night, and it's a little awkward off the shaft of the stick, but who cares? It's his first NHL goal. He had a pretty solid fist pump, pretty solid post-goal scoring move.
He looked excited, yeah.
And after the game, even though the game didn't end the way we wanted it then, you guys wanted it then, do you do anything for him? I mean, do you guys give him anything in the, you know, the dressing room?
Well, I think he got the puck. That's pretty standard.
Yeah.
I don't know what the players did for him. But, you know, it's nice for him to get that off his back. You know, the more games you play without scoring, starts to, especially as an offensive player, you start to think about it. So, but to his credit, like, you know, he carried it in himself. He recovered the puck. And then he went to the net. And that's, you put yourself in a position for good things to happen to you.
As he grows into his body at 6'4", what type of player do you think he'll be down the road? More Marian Hossa both ends of the ice, or, you know, more of the, I hesitate to use Gretzky as an example, but more of an offensive player?
I think he can be a two-way guy who can play in all situations and produce. So that's as good as it gets.
How are we doing on the goalie front? Are we going to platoon? And, you know, again, call me anytime if you need help on these decisions.
Yeah, well, at the risk of boring you, we got two really good goalies. They're both going to play. They're both going to be giving us great performances every night, which is good for the team.
You want me to scratch out a schedule and get it back to you?
You could, yeah.
How much of a setback is this Connor Murphy injury?
Yeah, it's a blow, no question. He's been very good for us. I think since we put him and Dunk together, they've been really solid, playing against top players, and so it's going to test us. But that's, you know, every team goes through these things where you lose an important player, and then it's an opportunity for other guys to take a bigger role. And, you know, often there's always players on your team who wish they were playing more, or who could give more to the team. Well, here's your chance, and that's healthy, and that'll help us build our depth in the future.
So, Coach, as far as professional hockey coaches go, you're on the younger side. How do you feel? How old do you feel on the inside? And then where do you go when you need to find extra wisdom in order to inspire your players?
Are you asking if he has like a hockey Yoda?
Yes. Yeah. Like, I mean, if you know.
She's bringing the big questions, Coach.
Yeah, that is. No question. That's a big one. No, I don't think about being young. I'm just, you know, you come to work every day. We have a great staff. We work together, and we're trying to help the team play better. So that's really all I focus on.
Do you feel like 80 years old on the inside, though?
No, but you feel older when you don't win. That's for sure. You feel young and lots of energy when you do win. But as far as like looking for inspiration, and I like reading, I like listening to coaches, players, retired guys who've had success. It's interesting. You're looking for new ideas, new angles that you can present to the team, because you're always looking for ways to keep the players interested as you deliver your message. Often you're delivering some version of the same message, but if you can spice it up with some different ideas, it helps.
It hasn't been that long since you've been a player at the highest level. Wait, are you 34? Is that right?
Yeah, that's what they tell me. Yeah.
So 34, who, when you were a kid and you were out there and you're playing on the ice and you were pretending to be somebody, who was the guy?
Yeah, I always liked Joe Sakic, Steve Yzerman. I was a centerman. I just loved, the very good two-way players, but, tremendous offensive contributions to the team. They played for the team, leadership, all those things, and ultimately they had a lot of team success. So those are two guys I really enjoyed watching and looked up to.
I know you've seen a lot of this rise, but since the Blackhawks came back and Rocky and John and Jay and Stan and everybody got this team on the right side, won three cups and all that, it's amazing the number of little kids who are into hockey now and how hockey has exploded in this town. And we love our Hawks, man. You know that. So let's keep it going. Let's get one tonight.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
All right, Seaman. That's Coach Jeremy Colleton. Dave, you might need to pick up some of the slack in this hour and 13 left in the show. You too, Jay. I got to get a schedule to Colleton on the goalies.
Yes.
I don't think he wants your help.
Oh, I thought I heard. I heard a lot of enthusiasm.
Yes. No. I think when you offered... Yeah, he doesn't want to ask, Steve. Uh-uh. Yeah. He doesn't want to ask you because he doesn't want to put you in any trouble. But I think since you offered,
sure,
Steve,
don't do it.
Dave is lying to you.
Here's the thing: when I said, okay, Coach, can I scratch out a schedule and get it back to you? The way he said, "Oh yeah, sure, do that," I think really said it was very welcoming.
Yeah.
I think so too.
See, he doesn't want the other teams to know about his ace in the hole, Cochran.
Yeah, and that's why when you asked that hockey mentor question, he didn't say I was his hockey Yoda.
What is going on with the guys on this show?
We all got to back each other up.
Joe.
We all got to back each other up. We know you won't help. You done any shopping yet for Christmas? Christmas is getting close. What are we, 10 weeks away?
Heck no.
No. Are you a late shopper?
Mm-hmm.
Like how late? Like January?
Like, not that late.
I think I found a book for you. Do you like reading?
I do.
It's called I Could Pee on This, Another Poems Written by Cats. Yeah.
Cats are overall such jerks, but once you earn their love and trust, I mean, it's really for people that enjoy punishing themselves to love a cat. But then once you're in, you feel the love is like unlike any other.
I see cat as more of a bad boyfriend, bad girlfriend relationship where you almost stay in it for the abuse, but I could be wrong. When I order something on Amazon, I don't know about you guys, sometimes I'll just poke around and find weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything's on Amazon. How about a T-Rex wine bottle holder?
Oh, I would love that.
I can get that for you. A waffle blanket. It's a blanket, not waffle in pattern. It's an actual shape like a waffle blanket with a waffle texture and a whole deal.
Aren't all blankets square anyway?
Yeah, but I mean, it's got the square ripples and,
You mean the little divots in the waffle.
Yeah, it's flaky.
That holds the syrup.
Yeah, you could pour syrup on the blanket and then regret it, but it would look like a waffle.
Well, I got super excited. I thought you were saying that was actually an edible waffle.
An edible blanket?
No.
How many breakfasts would that be? a Chia Pet Bob Ross, paint with Bob?
Oh.
No, not your
thing?
You
know what? His shows are on Netflix, and if you really want to chill out and be zen,
sure,
just watch that. I've been doing that a little bit here and there.
Mary, I know how you like to waste money. How about a shower head with a wireless speaker?
Yeah. Is there one for the bathtub? Rather of that.
Oh, so like what would that be? Like a faucet with a wireless speaker?
Yeah, that would be better. I like my baths better.
How about a microwave s'mores maker?
I'd take one of those.
Isn't it just called a microwave? Why does it have to be a s'mores maker?
Maybe there's like sticks in there, specific, like, you know, like a chicken on the rotisserie.
Yeah, it's what you put in the microwave. Right. You stack the ingredients under two plastic arms, fill up the water compartment in the back, and indoor s'mores happen in 30 seconds.
I like it.
Easier to light a fire.
I've been looking for a smokeless indoor grill. Because I don't have a balcony.
Oh, you just want to crank it out in the house.
Yes, but without setting off the fire alarms or the sprinklers.
What about the George Foreman?
I don't think that really is a grill. It's more of a...
They call it the George Foreman grill.
I know. Like a hot plate panini press.
You can't be the first person that's requested this. There's got to be something.
I'm just saying, be on the lookout as you're moseying about on the interwebs.
Do your windows open at your place?
Well, sometimes.
You just need a chimney. Then you can build. I know a guy who has a grill in his house that has a chimney that shoots out the roof of his house. It's really cool.
I'm a renter, so.
Yeah, I know it's not going to work.
How about a bicycle pizza cutter to make cutting your pizza more fun?
Perfect. I have one of those.
Do you?
Yeah, somebody gave it to me as a gift.
Yeah.
Wait, so what do you get on top of a seat or something and ride it over the pizza?
You hold it the palm.
Only if you get the extra large pizza.
You know what? Grzanich and I were on the same page. That's what I was thinking. Like, do you have to power this?
No, you hold the seat is like where you put the palm of your hand, and then it's got two wheels and it's got two.
Oh, it's just in the shape of a bicycle.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
That's entertaining.
Yeah.
I will continue to find weird things on Amazon for you. And by I will, I mean Vivian and Joe will continue to find weird things on Amazon that I'll take credit for. It's 9:55. We'll come back, get your news top of the hour. And then Mr. Geiger, Walter Jacobson, and Jim Belushi all next hour on 720 WJM. It's a love theme from Geiger Wealth Management. Money. Bill Geiger gets up every morning. All he wants to do is help you make money and keep money. Right? That's it.
Keeping the money part is especially important.
Yeah, and right now people have a little bit of panic going on.
They do.
All right, so what do you need to tell us to have us panic less and be more, I don't know, realistic, but also with a sense of urgency?
Well, I'll tell you a story. 2 days ago, I had a gentleman come into my office, and he says, Bill, he says, and he had a decent-sized portfolio. He says, I don't know what to do right now. He says, if I stay in the market, he says, I'm deathly afraid I'm going to give back a lot of my gains. I'm going to lose a lot of money. He says, but if I get out of the market and it keeps going up, he goes, that hurts too. And Steve, the way we helped him is we manage money for our clients the same way a university would manage their endowment.
Okay.
You talk to the guy that manages Yale's endowment fund, wrote a book, and what he said in the book, he says, we are not interested in trying to beat the S&P every year. He says, what we care about is we can take out 4 or 5 or 6% a year for scholarships and grants and everything, and that our endowment's going to be around 100 years from now.
Right.
He says, that's what's important to him. And if you think about it, when you're retired, that's kind of what you want to do, too. You want to take out 4 or 5 or 6% a year. You want to make sure that your money's around to leave to your kids. You don't run out of money.
Sure.
And so what we do is we keep people fully invested, but we have hedging strategies. It's kind of like putting an airbag on your portfolio.
So give me an example, if there is an easy one to explain, of how that might work.
Well, let's look at the airbag. You don't even know the airbag's there.
Okay.
You're driving down the road, you get in an accident.
Boom!
It comes out and it keeps you from hurting yourself.
Right.
We do the same thing with our portfolios. We set it up so maybe the maximum you can lose is 15%, maybe 20%. And then you don't have any more losses. It protects you. It
as
keeps you from getting
just
hurt.
A free fall.
Yeah, and most people can live through a 10, 15, 20% drop, but not a 50% drop. So what that allows them to do, and this gentleman we're doing the same thing for, he can stay fully invested. The market keeps going up. He keeps doing well.
Sure.
But if the market hits the skids, gets in an accident, he's protected from a big loss.
Now, you fully believe, or at least you did last time you were in, there's a correction coming.
Well, there is.
Because what goes up
the
must come down.
The $64,000 question is when, right?
Right. And when you get up in the morning, you're also concerned about your own family and the money you make.
Yeah.
So if your job is to make sure that my money's okay. I trust you by doing it because you got to make sure that your money's okay. This is your job.
Yeah. And the first part of our job is to protect our clients. That's the first part. After that is to make the money, provide income for them, all the neat stuff that you do for retirement planning. But the first priority is to keep what you have. You've worked 40 years to save this money. You've got more money you've ever had in your life. This is not the time, getting up to retirement, that you want to lose 30, 40, 50% of it.
Well, I've known you for a while, and I feel like I've learned a lot from you. But one of the things I think I've learned is that we can be self-sabotaging when it comes to this stuff. That we try to outthink the market, or we try to outthink the Bill Geiger, or outthink people that do this every day. I always look at you as like the pilot of the airplane. I can't fly the plane. I'd rather have you fly it. So that's why I return to you. But there are reasonable and unreasonable expectations of what you can do. Like when people come in and go, how much do I need right now? But they can't tell you what they want to do with their life and how expensive it's going to be going down the road. So you do have to work in some general generalities and just try to keep between the white lines.
Yeah, and we help people through this process. If you ask a couple, what is your lifestyle cost right now? What goes out of the door on a monthly basis?
Yeah.
A lot of people have no idea. Most people have no idea. Okay, and we help them through things like that so we can understand what they're going to need. Then we make sure that we set up their portfolio so they have the income that they're going to need, and we make sure that they don't have any big losses along the way. Our goal is for our clients to be able to sleep at night once they retire, to keep their lifestyle, and leave something for the kids.
If you're 60 or 65 years old and you've done okay and your house is paid off and you know your net worth.
Yes, sir.
Is there a target percentage when you look at your net worth that you ought to be able to live on? Or that's pretty lifestyle specific too, I suppose.
That's pretty lifestyle specific too. As you were describing that 60 years old, you've saved. The first thing that was going through my mind is that's about the time you need to come in and sit down with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, late 50s, early 60s. Because if you think about it, most people just keep investing the same way they did since they were in their 30s. They're trying to hit the ball out of the park,
Sure.
And this is a different stage of your life. You don't have 30 years to make up a big loss anymore. So this is the time in your life you want to look at your portfolio, make sure that it's structured right for retirement. And that's why we specialize in that.
Now, I know there's a lot of women who are competitive in this regard as well, but I think I'm not speaking out of school when I say it's more a male thing where guys would like to be a little risky, not risky, but they want to have a little money to play with in the market. They want to shoot for something that's going to pop. That's okay if you understand that money is going to be in a higher risk position, right?
Yeah, and there's nothing wrong with taking a part of your portfolio and setting up a play account. And, you know, do whatever you want in that play account. But the bigger part of your account, the serious money, you want to treat it seriously because that's what's going to last you for the next 30 years. That's it. Unless you win the lottery.
Knowing a correction is coming, is real estate something people ought to be looking at now?
I'm not so sure in this area. The gentleman that's on from Cranes every once in a while in the afternoons, I listened to him last week. He sounded downright depressed.
About the greater Chicago and Illinois area.
Yeah.
But around the country, like, you know,
maybe around the country, that's
different argument.
It might be a different argument.
So maybe buy something in Florida, then maybe that's a good investment for you.
That could be. Yeah. It could be.
So, but that's another question you can work out because really it all comes down to math, doesn't it?
It does. So. It comes down to math and what you want and how to structure things the right way.
Viv, you want something? Do you have something you want to throw in here before we move forward?
Because just call me Viv.
I was talking to Viv.
Oh, you were?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. How about you, G? Do you have something you want to throw in since Viv's only 26?
Well, I mean, I guess that would be interesting to kind of have an idea of what somebody that's 26 should do, what somebody in their 30s early 40s should be doing.
If you're 26, early 30s, early 40s, your number one focus should be just save every penny that you can. That's your goal.
And it's hard to do at that age.
I know. But the more you can save, the younger you are, the more powerful it is later on.
But you're saying that there's going to be, the market's going to correct itself. I mean, we have 401k accounts too. Yeah. Should we?
If you're 26, don't even worry about that.
What if you're 36 and what if you're 46? Mm.
Until you get into your mid to late 50s.
Okay.
Just don't worry about it. Just keep saving and saving and saving and saving.
And you don't suggest that we keep putting it into our 401k?
Yeah.
Okay.
Max out.
Okay.
Good question, Viv.
Thanks. Calimera.
Maybe I need to get a little more sleep. All right. So I talk about this all the time, this full financial workup that you do at Geiger Wealth Management. You've got tools and tricks and tips up your sleeve that we don't have access to. So if I come in with my portfolio, if it's $500,000 or more, and I'm one of the first five to call now and ask for this at 800-681-2498, you're not going to charge me anything.
No.
But what am I going to walk out with?
It's absolutely complimentary, but what you're going to walk out with is a full-blown retirement plan for yourself and your spouse that you know exactly what you need to do. You have all your ducks in a row. You understand how you're going to retire, and you have a plan. And having a plan allows you to sleep. It allows you to stop worrying about this. And if you've got some blind spots in your portfolio, we can help you find them and help you correct them. And maybe that's one of the most important parts about this, is to really know what you don't know, maybe right now. Make sure you're not missing anything.
It's not just about knowing what you have, it's knowing what you don't have, too. And what you do when you go through somebody's portfolio is you do a deep dive.
We do. We analyze where they're at right now so they can understand how much risk they have, what their growth and income potential is, and then we help them make sure that their portfolio is structured the way it should be for someone going into retirement. It shouldn't look like a 30-year-old's.
You're just trying to help, right?
How much money do you need? Like, what's the estimate amount of money people need to live off of after they retire?
It depends upon how much you're spending.
Okay.
If you spend a lot,
but like the average,
you need a lot.
Like, gee, you'll need a lot.
The average, though. Like, I mean, is it?
There's no such thing as
okay.
average.
No. All right. Gotcha.
No. I thought the same thing. It's a fair question because I always thought the same. I mean, people in general think the same thing. There's some magic number. But you think about your friends, the way one friend lives their life is not the way another lives their life, and they might be making the same amount of money, and you had 20 years on that, and they're really in different places.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. We have couples come in that salt-of-the-earth couples, and they've saved, and they're used to not spending a lot, and they don't need as much, and ironically, because of their lifestyle, they have a lot, yeah. right?
I guess, right. Should you be saving, assuming that you're going to live to be 90 or like 100, or should you just be...
Dave and I should be saving that we're going to live till next Tuesday. you should be saving till you live to be 100. I don't think that's outlandish at all. I think you're... next generation, and certainly, I mean, you go to like Abigail, like Bill, your granddaughter and my grandkid,
yeah.
at 4 years old, they could live to be 110.
I sat down, I mentioned this before we went on the air. I met with a client yesterday. Her mother just passed at 101 years old,
yeah.
and she was living by herself and on her own.
I just assume that my generation and younger will be working until we're like 85.
Well, it's not out of the question.
Well, save as much as you can. Set yourself up so you have plenty of income, and work on it now.
Last word to you, Mr. Arnett.
No, I was just going to say, my dad retires. He was 65. He's about to turn 96. Thankfully, he planned for it.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, you gotta figure. We always plan for clients living into their 90s. Just to be on the safe side. Their money better last them into their 90s. And ideally, there's money left to leave to the kids. But at the same time, they can live a comfortable life.
If you've done a decent job, you're not going to outlive your money.
No. Yeah. Well, if you've done a decent job and you don't have big losses.
Yeah, it's true.
That's what kills people.
Sure.
You have a big loss, you get in close to retirement, it will change, Steve, the rest of your life.
My grandmother lived to be 101, and she actually wasn't killed by that. She was killed in a surfing accident. She fell off her board, and a shark got her.
He's lying.
She really did. She'll do 101.
True story.
True story. Bill, great to see you.
Great to see you, sir.
Thank you for coming in. Well, it's been too long since Mr. Belushi's been on the show. We welcome Chicago's own Jim Belushi in just seconds here. We are working on getting him on the phone right now. In the meantime, I'm trying to decide on a Halloween costume for me. And right now, I'm leaning towards the notorious RBG.
Ruth Bader Ginsburg?
Yeah, I think it'd be a good look for me. I just don't know if they make it in a big and tall.
I just can't wait to see you in that little doily collar.
The good thing is the Supreme Court gown is it's more of a flowy kind of thing. So,
what are you trying to say, Grzanich?
I'm just saying that I think it will be flattering. I think it would be flattering.
Well, no, I mean, since I've lost weight, I want to show off my moneymaker. You know what I'm saying?
Then, yeah, but how are you
going to
put
the
your
sexy Supreme Court gown then? Right, I got
sexy
it.
RBG. Yeah.
You got a problem though. How are you going to do your hair in a bun?
Well, I guess we're going full wig there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
With the glasses?
I don't think I have any option. Yeah, with the glasses. The notorious RBG, I really don't have a backup plan for that. That's the one.
I love that you feel inspired. We got to find a little pair of pearl earrings as well.
I think me as Ruth Bader Ginsburg would steal any Halloween party there is.
Or you could do RBJ working out.
Oh, yeah, muscled up?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, she does that workout.
That's me, too. But, you know, honestly, how old is she? She's like 90, right? 91, 92? Mm. I'm pretty sure I can out-bench press her. I mean, I'm not positive, but I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, she's pretty tough.
941, as I mentioned a minute ago, it's been far too long since we've had Mr. Belushi on the show. Ladies and gentlemen, Jim Belushi, welcome home as always. Let's go there now. Hey, buddy, how are you?
Hello.
Hey, man, how are you? I'm operating the phone, so when I push the buttons, everything's a gamble.
Oh, jeez.
So how you been?
How you doing today?
I'm good. How have you been?
I'm doing good. Traveling around the state, Chicago. I'm going all over the place, having fun.
Yeah, well, we're glad you're coming into town. Now, I'm not so sure this live improv show is a good idea. You're trying to get yourself killed on stage? What are you doing?
We have so much fun. I mean, we really have a great time together. Got Larry Joe Campbell coming in on Saturday night to play with us. And, you know, we just capture a little magic, man. I mean, the whole thing about improvisation when I first saw Second City was, wow, there is magic that happens in this room. I want to be part of it.
You know,
so it's been great to just be part of that magic all these years.
Anybody that's ever been on stage, well, I'll boil it down even farther. Anybody that's ever told a joke in their office with a couple of people standing around and you forget the punchline, you get that little trickle of sweat running down your back, you get a sense of what it's like. But there is a rush to it. It's like jumping out of an airplane. When you're doing improv and somebody's just throwing stuff at you, that's how you find out how funny you are real fast.
And you can find out how not funny you are, too.
That's very true.
Dangerous line that you walk, but that's the edge, and that's kind of the fun, and the adrenaline comes up, and you say things that you never knew you would say. And sometimes it's funny.
Well, what's the thing you're looking forward to the most when you're back in town?
Well, I'm looking forward to the improv. We had such a great time there in Schaumburg last time. We sold out, and the audiences were just so warm and accepting that it's like putting on a warm blanket, you know, coming home and improvising and laughing together so hard. It's a good show. We've had like 11 standing ovations in a row.
Wow.
In this group, so. Yeah, it's been a ball.
That's pretty impressive. By the way, it's Friday and Saturday night at the Improv at Schaumburg at Woodfield, which is a great room. You know, for those of you who love comedy, you got to get out and see it.
It's so funny because yesterday a picture of you popped up in my Instagram feed, and one of my friends was trying to take an incognito photo of you with you not noticing. So it was kind of like one of these, like, it was a selfie, but you were in the background.
Well, here's the thing. Jim Belushi is one. Let me just speak for you, Jim, for a second. Jim Belushi is one of the most approachable good guys in show business. You can go up to Jim and say hi anytime.
Almost any time.
No,
almost
I mean any time. In a dressing room at the mall, with a face full of pasta, whatever.
Yeah, well, that's the mall is all right. Yeah, it's the bathrooms that get a little.
That's funny.
Oh, hi. How are you? Yeah, just let me finish, and I'd be glad to do a selfie. No, don't want to do a selfie right this minute. Hold on, let me wash
right.
my hands.
Right, and let's avoid the handshake or the high five. How about that altogether?
Yeah, let's do that. At least until we're done watching.
All right, we know what a Chicago sports fan you are. What are we doing with these Bears?
I don't know, but I'm going to the game.
So, but at 3-3, are you optimistic? You pessimistic? You somewhere in the middle?
Well, you know, I'm such a Bears fan. I'm scared to death every time I watch the game. You know, it's very hard for me. I always keep my optimism because you have to give that energy and belief, but I'm scared to death.
Understandable. And you heard the Cubs have a new manager.
Yes.
Like it? Don't like it? Don't know.
You know, it's not my business. I love Joe.
You know what? That's a good end
I
of that.
I can't then. Make those kind of choices. I love Joe. He brought us the world championship. And
sure.
I'll always be a deep fan of his and appreciative. And I've met him quite a few times. He's a gentleman. And
he's a good guy.
We had great conversations. So I wish him the best. But, it, you know, it broke my heart a little bit.
And this week... or I should say this week, tonight, the Blackhawks are back here with the Flyers. We do, we're the Blackhawks station, which I think you know. And I love the Hawks. And it's early in the season, and they haven't won everything. It's a little bit of a slow start, but they're starting to gel. I feel really good about this Blackhawks team, Jim.
I do, too. I have been watching, and I've been really enjoying the games. I'm very excited. I mean, the Blackhawks excite me the most right now, honest to God. I mean, oh, I just love watching them fly on that ice, man.
Yeah, no kidding.
I love seeing that symbol go right through. Oh, man, I just love the Hawks.
I'd love to have Tommy Hawk right in the middle of this show Saturday night just pop out. So, Jim Belushi is live at the Improv, Chicago Improv in Schaumburg at Woodfield. Again, that's Friday night, 7:30. And Saturday you're in Warren, Michigan. I felt like there were two shows. Am I missing a show on this list?
Yeah, no. I'm in Michigan tonight, and then I come Friday and Saturday for the Improv in Schaumburg.
Yeah, okay. So I got a bad list here. Yeah, so the shows are Friday and Saturday night. Chicago Improv's website or StubHub or Jim Belushi and the Board of Comedy .com. Great talking to you, man. Come see us when you're in town.
Thank you, guys. Thank you so much. Looking forward to this weekend and a Bears win.
Bears win. Bears win. Hawks win. Hawks win. I actually had an echo there, didn't I?
You did.
That's Jim Belushi. Bill and Wendy are here at 9:50, and you guys can help me pick out a Halloween costume. I'm leaning towards Jim Belushi or the Notorious RBG.
Oh, both are good. Yeah. Both are good. Do costume changes. Do more than one.
Some of these are super expensive. I can get an Iron Man costume, but it's $830.
Why wouldn't you do it? Yeah. It's under $1,000. That's your budget, right?
Gene Simmons, $325. These are the most expensive.
Oh, I got so confused there for a second. I thought they meant Richard Simmons. I was like, why is a Richard Simmons costume cost that much?
You get a Richard Simmons costume now, but he'll give you $10 to wear it.
That's mean.
I hope Richard is okay. I haven't talked to him in a long time. I'm looking at some of these other shows. Are you guys going to any parties or anything? Halloween parties? Why is your mic not on? Okay, there it is.
It's a sign.
Do you need a costume? You go on any parties?
I was Ozzy Osbourne last year.
Awesome.
Because I had
Did you
stuff.
See it, G? It was perfect.
No,
I'll find a picture for you.
Yes. It was good. It was really good.
Oh my
she
gosh.
Walked around all day going, Sharon!
But was Bill Sharon?
I was not.
Oh.
But you could be in the right light.
Well, that's nice of you. Thank you, Steve. Yeah. Thank you.
I can get you a stormtrooper costume. You like this.
I already have one.
Do you?
No.
Well, your house, I'm surprised you don't. For those of you just somehow unaware, Wendy's husband runs, I believe, the biggest Star Wars podcast in the world, right?
It's pretty big.
Yeah.
Wow.
In the galaxy.
Yeah.
And Rebel Force Radio.
And get it wherever in the universe you pick up your podcast?
Yes.
And my wife runs a Hazel podcast.
Called Mr. Like B.
From yeah. Where's Hazel?
From the TV show Hazel.
Yeah, wasn't it Where's Hazel?
Or was no,
it
just Hazel.
Hazel. It's just Hazel.
She only has three subscribers, but they're very loyal.
And the fans are called Hazelnuts.
Hazelnuts.
Our Roomba at home is called Hazel.
Oh, is that true?
Yes, my husband named it Hazel.
You got to do a segment on that on my wife's podcast.
I should.
Wow.
That's true. That'd be great.
Bill is talented.
No, I have nothing to do with it.
By the way, before we go any further, I love when we get texts that weren't intended for us.
Like what? What'd you get?
Okay, listen. Hi, Carolyn. Not a lot of new stuff for today's meeting, unless you have something. I figure we could finalize a couple of programs, maybe start December sign-up, discuss giving scholarships, membership. Have you thought about rules and what our plan might be? I can run the meeting since there's nothing really new, and I waited too long to contact you. I feel badly for Carolyn because she didn't get that text.
You know, during the Wintrust Business Hour, when Wendy and I are doing the bonus hour, we share the same text line. So some of the texts will be very business-related and about the stock market, and then some of them are about Pop-Tarts and Huckleberry Hound, and we always know whose are whose.
Right. There's never any confusion.
Nope, we know.
Batgirl, $400? I can't. I don't think I look good. If Batgirl were a cross-dresser, I could pull that off.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Consider it. Don't cross it out yet.
But really, at this point, I'm still leaning towards Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
Although, I keep looking at the platform boots that Gene Simmons' costume has, and that looks pretty good.
Oh, that would look nice on you, Steve.
You know, Gene Simmons kissed me on stage once.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm. Wendy has a similar tale.
You slept with him?
No!
I don't know how you top kissing.
Wow. I have kind of a long tongue.
Look at the HR people stop by.
I stuck out my tongue in front of Gene Simmons and said, I don't know what you're bragging about. And as I stuck my tongue out, he licked it.
So
I called Jimmy Mack and I said, this is what happened. And Jim says, I don't know if I should be proud or grossed out.
I'm going to go with a mix.
I spooned with Maury Povich.
You did?
Yep.
Before everything blew up?
Right around the time.
Oh,
how
boy.
Did Connie feel about that?
She was all right with it.
Yeah,
she's fine with it.
Anything to keep Maury out of the house at this point will be just fine. What are you guys doing on the show today?
So much stuff.
Really?
Yeah.
Because you seem confused about what might be coming up.
Fears and phobias, Steve. It turns out nearly everybody has a strange fear or phobia, so we will discuss that at great length.
And what's yours?
Needles.
Oh, yeah.
Scared of needles, as your son Ross is, right? Yes.
Yeah, but it's not. Same. But it's a legitimate medical condition.
Yes, it is.
It is. Yeah. You know, it's called.
It's vasovagal or vasovagal or
trypanophobia.
It's tryphana. Yeah,
but don't you have the vasovagal?
I used to drive one of those. Yeah, the mileage was horrible.
It's so where the blood rushes from your brain to your feet, and you pass out.
Well, he passes out. I get violent.
You do. Wow.
Yeah. Yes, I do.
Have you ever told the story about you being banned from a medical practice?
Well, Wendy, a family member of Wendy's is involved in that story. She was there. She was on duty when that happened. But, a doctor informed me that he was going to give me a blood test, and I informed him that only one of us would leave the room if he did.
Now, did you not supposed to do that to a doctor? That was coming?
I didn't know there'd have to be a shot. I usually bargain with whoever... My medical.
Because I would think you'd open up with that, just so we're clear.
Right.
I don't
there'll
do
be
shots.
No. There will be no needles.
Yeah. Yeah.
But my sister-in-law Sheila came out. She was working reception, and what did she say to you?
She said the doctor has suggested that you never come back.
Bill left banned from a medical practice. Yeah. Hey, good news! We got another text.
Oh,
this is an update
from
the earlier text. This is an update to Carolyn. She just wants to include now. Jen's bringing crackers, pretzels, and cheese to our 5:30 meeting. I'll bring a veggie tray.
Wow. That's going to be quite
a
day.
This is
a good meeting. We don't have veggie trays.
Well, the good news for Carolyn is she's not being asked for snacks. But what I think the texter, who I don't know the name of the texter, I think the texter is opening the door for Carolyn to step in and say, I'll bring a side of beef.
Right.
I'll bring something.
No, it's a girly meeting, I bet. That sounds like a girly meeting.
Crackers, pretzels, cheese, and veggie tray?
Somebody better bring wine.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't turn that down. Why is that a girly meeting?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Boys eat cheese and crackers and veggie. Well, it's dinner time. You'd get sub sandwiches, you know?
Right. Got to get some meat.
I thought Mary said it was an early meeting.
Yeah, I think it's early. 5:30.
All right, so let's get back to these phobias. I have this fear that texts will come in and I don't know who they're from.
It's fun, though.
Dave, do you have a phobia?
I'm not a big fan of... I wouldn't call it a phobia. I'm not a big fan of snakes.
Oh, I hate snakes.
Yeah.
But a phobia would mean a rational fear.
Where you get lightheaded, you feel like you're going to pass out.
But it really isn't based in fact.
Right.
Being afraid of snakes is totally normal and totally manly.
Right.
I'm not scared of anything.
No, of nothing.
Nope.
No man nor beast.
Nope. That's excellent. Yeah.
Wendy, do you have a phobia?
Probably just heights and a little claustrophobic, too. I don't want to be buried alive.
I forgot about the claustrophobia part.
So what about where we are?
There are two glasses. There's safety glass and real glass, so I'm okay. But we do when we first.
But you know, we're
here,
hundreds of feet high.
I know, but I have to have one hand on the window while I'm bracing myself and looking out.
Might be 1,000 feet.
Yeah.
It's not open. I'm okay with that.
Actually, that panel opens.
Don't you do that.
Just at random.
Gee, other than working with me, do you have a phobia?
Frogs, clowns, Muppets, and people dressed up in furry costumes.
Wow.
That's a whole list.
So were you ever assigned by Windy City Live to go cover that furries convention?
No, absolutely not. Don't try to assign me. It's very suspicious. Why do you have to hide in there? And it's going to be very sweaty.
I'm with you on that. Wow. I don't like mascots or other than Southpaw.
It's like
Tommy Hawk's okay.
I don't know who's in there. This is suspicious.
I'm so with you.
Thank you, Wendy.
But what do you think they're going to do? Take you to a high building and make you look out a window?
No, but you can't see their eyes, and your eyes are the window
creepy.
To the soul.
And Muppets are little versions of that.
I like Muppets.
If you ever want to scare G, show her an episode of The Masked Singer. Watch what happens.
Yeah. I think it might have had something to do with Kermit the Frog, because he's a frog, a Muppet, and kind
of... Oh, yeah.
She got a problem with all of it.
Yeah.
Well, I think Miss Piggy feels. She's sleeping. It all comes full circle. I don't know if you noticed.
It did come full circle.
Yeah.
Well done.
I'm going to go with Dave on snakes. I don't really have a fear of heights.
Not at all?
No.
No?
I like snakes. I had a snake when I was younger.
Well, it goes with your Ozzy Osbourne situation, doesn't it?
It was prep work.
many years.
Yeah. I'm like Dave. I fear nothing.
What? That's admirable for both of you guys.
Admirable or maybe a little dumb.
Right.
Yeah, it's possible.
It's right in the middle of those.
It's possible it could be both. Hey, do you guys want to play back my Jim Belushi interview?
We were going to ask. Is that all right?
Yeah. I don't know if we'll have time.
Listen, I'm going to tell you, he's going to be great at 7:30 on a Friday or Saturday night. I'm just advising you not call him at 9:30 in the morning.
It's early.
I'm pretty sure he just woke up.
Yeah.
Fine. Nice to see both of you. I wish you nothing but a good show.
Thank you, Steve.
We're going to come back tomorrow, G. Looks like we have to be here.
I'll be here.
Well, that sounded reluctant.
Looking forward to it.
I'm looking up the word enthusiasm in the dictionary. There's a picture of you guys right now.
Let me tell you something. Tomorrow's show, even better than the Jim Belushi interview. Even better. All right, when the music starts, it's news time.